across this a couple weeks ago as we were learning Parshas Baaloscha in Shir. But the Parshas Baaloscha opens up with Aaron lighting the menorah, and the Rashi asks, why is it that the lighting of the menorah is connected to the Parsha of the Nesiim, the story of the Nesiim, of the princes bringing their gifts towards the beginning of the Mishkan? And Rashi makes the comment because Moshe was feeling bad. Moshe saw all of these Nesiim, all of the princes being able to give their... Right, Aaron was feeling bad. Thank you. Aaron was seeing all of these Nesiim, all the princes bringing their gifts, which was recognizing the Chanukah, the creation of the Mishkan. It happened in Nisan, not in not Chanukah time, but yet that's the leaning that we have over the course of Chanukah time, the dedication of the Mishkan, where we have the rededication of the Beis HaMikdash. And Aaron saw all of the Nesiim bringing all of these gifts, and Aaron was like, "What about me? What about me?" That he felt bad. So Hashem says to Aaron, "Oh, don't feel bad." Oh, she made it. So Hashem says to Aaron, "So don't feel bad. I'll give you a mitzvah to do. The mitzvah that I'm going to give you to do is the mitzvah of the menorah. You'll be able to light the menorah for many generations to come." So that's Rashi quotes that right in the beginning of Parshas Baaloscha. It's famous. Rabbi's probably spoken about this once or twice, Parshas Baaloscha, etc. But there's a big gap there. Why is Aaron so upset? Aaron, at the same time that the Nesiim, that these guys are bringing their korbans, their gifts, Aaron's bringing his gifts. Aaron is also offering korbanos over the course of those days. And besides that, Hashem says, "Oh, don't feel bad because you're the Kohen Gadol and you'll be able to light the menorah." Well, Aaron, as being the Kohen Gadol, has a lot of other perks besides just lighting the menorah. He also gets to bring Ketores. He also gets to go into the Kodesh HaKadashim on Yom Kippur. There is other korban, there's the mitzvah of the Chavite Kohen Gadol, the special mincha offering that he brings every day. So why is he comforted by Hashem saying, "Oh, you'll have the menorah to bring"? There's many other things that he gets to bring that is unique, that is distinct from the rest of the Kohanim, and certainly distinct from the other Nesiim. So we'll leave that question on the side and continue on a little bit. The Ramban raises those questions. The Ramban hands that challenge to Rashi. He says, "Why is it that that Aaron's going to be consulted specifically with this? There's many other things that he has a leg up on the Nesiim." And Hashem's and the Ramban answers, really, this is a hint to the story of Hanukkah. That the story of Hanukkah is going to happen later on. And who are the heroes of the story of Hanukkah? The descendants of Aaron. That the Kohanim, the Beis Chashmonai, were from Aaron, and your descendants are going to be the ones that are going to rededicate it then. So just because the Nesiim, just because these princes are the ones who seem to be at the forefront of the dedication now, don't worry, you'll have your chance later on. And that's what's going to bring, that's what brought comfort to Aaron. But that's much later on. Why does that necessarily resolve the question? So that happens to be one of the several times that they point to as a hint to Hanukkah being in the Torah. Right? Have you ever heard these stories? There's a couple of Hanukkah mina Torah minayin. Where do we see Hanukkah in the Torah? So that's perhaps the primary clue that the story of Hanukkah is, that the story of Hanukkah is connected to the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash, and we're going to have that holiday. Anyone know other connections?
Today, this week's Parsha.
This week's Parsha, yes.
All the sentences are connected with Vavs, except for, there are only eight. Sentences that are.
There are eight sentences that don't have a Vav in them.
Correct.
Emor. What's an Emor?
After Sukkot, at least.
Yes, so after Sukkot, it talks about the story of... It mentions some of the mitzvahs of Hanukkah. Now, it's a little bit of a... It's a little cheap over there, because it's not... I remember hearing this as a kid, that after the mitzvah in Emor of Sukkah is given, the mitzvah of Hanukkah is given. So I was thinking, wow, like, interrupts the order of the year. So no, Sukkah's last, right? It starts with Pesach, goes around, Sukkah's the last one mentioned, and then there's a mitzvah of the menorah given. Now, it's interesting that it's still there, but that is also considered one of the hints. Another one is the 25th word of the Torah is the or. That happens to be the 25th word of the Torah, which is the 25th day of Kislev. And there's a couple others that are out there that people point to as being a hint to that. But anyways,
the eight psukim that don't begin with vav. That's just in this parsha.
Or well, that, yeah, talk to parsha. Sam about that one.
Just in this parsha.
Trump music.
Yes, it is.
I don't know what it's originally.
So the so what else do we got? So another one is that another question that is often raised over the course of Hanukkah is that the Rambam, when he discusses the laws of Hanukkah, so at the very end of his description, 2-3 chapters on the laws of Hanukkah, he says, by the way, the mitzvah of Hanukkah is chaviv ma'od, is very special to Hashem. And then he just goes on. And like that's the end of his stories of Hanukkah. So what is this very special, this very unique thing? The Rambam, the Maimonides in his halachos of Hanukkah. Another one, another question over the course of Hanukkah, is that as we say, and we think we say these words, and we might say them quickly, but we don't necessarily focus on where'd that come from. But we light the candles, and after you light the candles, so we say this paragraph, that we say, Haneir Salalo Nachum Adlikim, but these candles that we light, they're a commemoration of those miracles that happened in those days. That was lit by the Kohanim. Haktoshim v'chol shmonasim Hanukkah. Haneiros halalu kodeshim ve'ein lan rishus lishtamish behem. That these candles are holy, meaning these in front of us are holy, and I'm not allowed to use them. Elder Sambavan, I'm only allowed to look at them. So what is the source of that sanctity? Where did that sanctity come from? Why are we saying these candles are holy? Just because they're used for a mitzvah? Or perhaps there is a little bit more to it. I mean, is that it? I mean these were used for a mitzvah, and therefore you shouldn't use them for some kind of degraded purpose.
Or Shabbos candles.
But the mitzvah of Shabbos candles is to set up light for you to use. That's all. That is the mitzvah.
I didn't know that.
But yes, right, in order so that you don't stub your toe over the course of
made the price of the whole lunch.
Okay.
So does that mean getting rid of the menorah is an issue?
Getting rid of the menorah? So no, it's not. We assume there is actually an issue of using unburned oil that should have been used. That is actually a halachic issue that we always talk about at the end of Hanukkah. If the candle didn't make it the full time, so then the oil that was supposed to be used is not supposed to be thrown out. It's supposed to be,
what?
I don't know, used for mitzvah purpose or something like
what
that.
What about the wax? Like wax that drips.
Maybe for next year. You burn it with the chametz, something like that.
What about the wax that drips off?
What?
The wax that falls on the ground.
Right, so we assume that anything that is, as long as the candles make it the 20, you know, the requisite amount of time, so then you're okay.
And throw away the wax that fell.
When you say the oil that was supposed to be used, you mean, I guess in our day, the oil that you poured into the menorah, you put your...
Right.
Your wick on top if it doesn't go all the way. If it doesn't burn the wick.
Correct.
All the
way out. Yeah, because ours sometimes freezes because it's outside.
What?
Right.
Can you use that the next night? I mean, hypothetically.
Yes. Yes, you use it the next night also. Okay. Right. That's the ideal. The problem is the eighth night. What do you do with it? That's what you're actually supposed to do. What do you do with the eighth night? So
what about the wax that
so, no, that wasn't used. It wasn't needed.
So you throw it away?
When did the habit of using candles instead of oil start?
Historically?
Yeah.
I don't know. It probably had. I assume it had something to do with economics. I would bet.
Maybe safety.
Nowadays, some.
I think it's the opposite.
You think wax is more expensive than oil?
No. I think candles are more dangerous than. I think candles are more dangerous than the oil.
Yeah.
So candles are higher up, and they could blow over. Whereas the oil, I mean, thus in our day, the oil and it's much lower down into the menorah.
Yeah, but kids could reach into it.
Yeah, I think there is an idea we could give a share another time about why is oil really preferable for Hanukkah or not? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But I think it more has to do with convenience and what's available and
okay,
what looks.
I just wondered.
So, but anyways, the Rashba comments that why is it so? It's not, the Rashba on that Gemara. So I think Rashi comments that well, it's used for a mitzvah, and it's inappropriate to use for other things. But the Rashba on that Gemara says, well, it's like the menorah in the Beis Hamikdash. That it's kadosh, but it's like the menorah in the Beis Hamikdash. So is it because we're recalling the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, or perhaps maybe there's even more to it, that it's like the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash? And a fourth question, which this might also be worth the price of lunch here, just the question might be worth the price of lunch, and that is the Gemara points out, the Gemara has a discussion there about, in the story of Hanukkah, it talks about why is it that we needed in the description of the menorah, it's actually appeared recently in Daf Yomi as well, the same comment. Why is it that do you think Hashem really needs the light of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash? Right? It's in order to... Hashem creates his own light. The whole place was lit up because of the... Because of the Shekhinah, etc. But over the court, Rashi makes a comment there about do you think Hashem really needs your light? But why? There was a light continuously there, and what is that light? It's known as the Ner Tamid. Right? We have a Ner Tamid in our shuls. Was there a Ner Tamid in the Beis HaMikdash? Sort of. The candle that is referred to as the Ner Tamid was the candle of the menorah that was continuously lit. How was it continuously lit? So Rashi on that Gemara explains that it was lit the night before. It stayed lit. All the other candles of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash burnt out by the time you got to the morning, right? One candle stayed the entire day, and that was the fire that they then used for the next night.
Okay.
Now, how did that candle stay? So I would say, well, it must have had twice as much oil. The answer, but no, it didn't. It had the same amount of oil. It was the same size cup with the same amount of oil as the rest of the candles. So why is it that one candle lasted longer than all of the others? It was a miracle. That was one of the miracles of the Beis HaMikdash, and it's assumed that that was one of the miracles that was there in the first Beis HaMikdash, not in the second Beis HaMikdash, or was there in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, not the end of the second Beis HaMikdash, but that was considered an ace. So why is it that we commemorate the miracle of the menorah lasting for 8 days? The same miracle happened every day in the Beis HaMikdash, that there was this candle that was continuously lit and continuously burning, even though Alpi nature
was
should
that
have
the middle
down.
One? In the, if the
so it's a machlokas whether it's the middle one or the right or the southmost, sorry, or the westmost one. That's my focus in the Gemara.
Hanukkah, a reference back to that nace?
Well, maybe, but maybe it is, but we don't mention it. Right? We mentioned that the miracle is that. So what is? But the miracle is happening continuously. So why are we only? Why are we making a holiday about the later miracle and not the earlier miracle?
Because that's when it started again. It's a miracle.
Okay.
That miracle.
All right. Maybe. All right. Yeah. I mean, we recognize events, not necessarily something that happened continuously. There are a lot of miracles that happen in the Beis HaMikdash that we don't necessarily have holidays for, but that we.
Why is it so important to light it from the left to the right?
Why do we light from the left to the right? We light from the left to the right because we start with the newer candles and go to the older ones. We start out with our additional candles. That's the reason behind it. Is it absolutely required? Not necessarily. But that's where we're going from. We always start to the from the right.
Yeah.
That's how we always lean, and that's with our Hanukkah celebration. So then we start with the new ones and continue on to the ones that were there already. Okay. So there is sort of Soloveitchik here in came across this in the Rav Thinking Aloud on Sefer Bamidbar. He points to that Gemara in Masechta Shabbos, that story there about the candle continuously burning, and he points out to the important line. What does the Gemara there say? The Gemara asks, why is it they need the menorah? For all the 40 years that they were in the desert, they traveled by Hashem's light, which we assume was not the light of the menorah, it was a different light. And the Gemara's answer is, Ela Eidus hi labai olam sheshchina shorah b'Yisrael. Rather, what was the goal of this menorah? What was the goal of lighting the menorah? It was considered testimony that the Shechina resides amongst the Jewish people. That was what the purpose of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash was. It was testimony that the Shekhinah resides amongst the Jewish people. And perhaps if one, with that understanding, the menorah, you can actually go back on some of these questions. Right? What is it that the, well, let's go to the idea. Well, so therefore, based on that, he continues on and explains that is then the basis of the Kedusha of the menorah. The Kedusha of the menorah, according to those we've shown that assume, it's like the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. He takes great pains to say that this halacha isn't like a zecher l'migdash. Oh, we're just going to remember what happened in the Beis HaMikdash. He says, no, this is a mitzvah now. The menorah that we actually light on Hanukkah is like the menorah that took place that was lit in the Beis HaMikdash. In what way is it like that menorah? Because it bears the same testimony. The Gemara that says, oh, the menorah was lit in the Beis HaMikdash to remind us that the Shechina, or to demonstrate our testimony, not just remind us, a testimony that the Shechina, that Hashem's presence, resides amongst the Jewish people. And we continue to light the menorah to make that same demonstration, that the Shechina resides amongst the Jewish people. Now, why is that specifically now? I mean, that's something that happened every day of the year. What is it that we specifically need a reminder on the holiday of Hanukkah, that the Shechina resides amongst the Jewish people? So perhaps that was the goal of the Greeks or the Syrian Greeks. The Greek as one giant empire ended with Alexander the Great. This is already a couple of decades later. I think 70, 80, I forget how many decades later. These were the Syrian Greeks that came in. But Rav Soloveitchik points out an interesting thing. One could look like this back. He says the Greeks' persecution of the Jewish people, right, was not a physical persecution. It was a spiritual, religious persecution. And he claims that that was the first example of religious anti-Semitism. At any other time that the Jews got in trouble, it was a physical attack. Right? The destruction of the first base of Mikdash by the Babylonians was, we're going to come in, we're going to conquer the land, and we're going to kill you, or we're going to spread all of you around. But all of that was just a physical goal. Right? It was just Jews are a nation that we're going to kill like every other nation. Right? The Greeks came in with a goal of spiritual annihilation. And one looks at the things that they attempted to do, the attempt to get rid of a bris milah, the attempt to get rid of a Shabbos, the sexual purity of the Jewish people. So all of those are unique aspects of the Jewish people that they were attempting to get rid of. We're going to make you like everyone else. Right? And that was sort of the theme at the time, right? That we're the enlightened Greeks, and we're going to go and spread our gospel amongst all the barbarians that are out there, and impose our thought, impose our ideology on them. Now, maybe that was a good idea for some people, but any time that somebody is going to attempt to impose an ideology on another group, that group is going to resist, right? And the Jewish people resisted, what were they resisting? They were resisting saying, "No, we are unique. We are special." Right, the Shechina resides amongst us. And perhaps that is the specific connection that they had to the menorah. I mean, also think about it.
I got another one.
Yeah?
Oh, maybe it's one you're going to do.
No, it wasn't.
It had to do with Shabbos, Mila, and Nida.
Yes.
And that's Shemen. That's oil.
Right. Shemen, okay. That spells out those three things, yeah.
So is that why we advertise it, too? Because
what was the
we
name?
Want to show that the Shechina
Nida.
Is...
Purity.
With us?
The idea of pursuing Nisa is actually really only for the Jewish people. The idea of putting it out in front for others to see, the goal is really that other Jews see it, not necessarily that other, but it's to remind ourselves. We're not necessarily proselytizing to others, we're not necessarily showing love to others, but just reminding ourselves that we're unique, we're special, and we have a special role to play in the world.
We have the same reason for the mezuzah on the outside of the door for other people to see?
I'm not sure others, for us to see. For you, that it's going to be assigned to you, that we have to remind ourselves of those things.
The menorah is for us to see. Why do we put it in the
It's to remind all the Jews, to remind Jewish people. The pursuing niece is amongst Jews, not amongst non-Jews.
Suppose hypothetically one lives in an area where there are no other Jews.
Right, well...
It's a snowstorm, and nobody's traveling in
there. Right, so this came up in a halachic way the other night, that somebody, the period of time that one would light is what we call, is until Ashtich HaRegel Min HaShuk, until people leave the thing. That's figuring out a period of time. So what is that time? So, time of the Shulchan Aruch has its time. We assume that it goes later at night, because people are traveling around at night. How late does it go? So it might be subjective as to what kind of street you live on. Are people traveling on the street? Are people not traveling on the street? So somebody in this discussion said, well, I live on a street, and nobody's driving on that street after 4 o'clock. Nobody drives around there at all. It's like, okay, it doesn't mean you're exempt from the mitzvah. You can't make a case that, a single person without a family that lives in a place, so therefore he's exempt from the mitzvah. You can't make that argument like that can't be. It has to be. It's just an extension of the time, but not a minimization of the time. But we do have. There is a major change that took place. That the description in the Gemara is the menorah outside, and by Ashkenazim the menorah is inside. So how'd that happen? So there was a concern about putting the menorah outside, and that concern we still assume today. Most poskim would recommend, even in America, where you can feel totally safe, you don't have to worry, etc. The minhag is still to light inside as opposed to outside. Notwithstanding, some people might still light outside.
Yeah, right? It's like safety because someone would.
A persecution issue.
Okay.
And they also, also keep in mind what season of the year it is and those kinds of things also.
Gotcha.
All right, so one further thought that the Rebbe had, a different piece in this book that connects somewhat, and that is, back to the first question, so why was Aaron specifically appeased with that? They say, well, Aaron's, one more thing, why is it Chaviv to Hashem? Because why is Hanukkah special to Hashem? Because that's reminding of us of Hashem's presence amongst us. But back to the beginning, why is it that Aaron was appeased by the idea of the menorah? So Soloveitchik suggests that, well, what was really bothering him about the Nesi'im? What did they have that was unique that he wasn't going to do? All those things were karbanos, which he would get to do anyways. So he says there was one thing that those Nesi'im, that those princes got to do, that Aaron would never get to do, and that is to bring a private ketores offering, to bring a private incense offering. That an incense is always a public matter. A private person can never bring it, with 12 exceptions. What were the 12 exceptions? Those 12 princes that amongst their listing was a ketores, was a incense offering. So Hashem comes to Aaron and says, so I bothered Aaron. I was like, I'm never going to get to do that. Even though I'm going to get to bring all the karbanos, I'm never going to have an opportunity to do that. So the appeasement to Aaron was, you'll get to do the menorah. What does the menorah have to do with the ketores? So he points out that the psukim, whenever it talks about the ketores, it always mentions it in the context of lighting the menorah. The pasuk tells us in Shmos, "V'yiktir alav Aaron ketores semi b'vokar b'vokar." Aaron's going to have to light the menorah, bring the ketores every morning, the incense every morning. "Be'itivu es haneiros yaktirenu valos Aaron," when he lights the candles, right, and when he. And when he lights the candles at night, what's he going to do then? That's when the ketores are going to be offered. They're always offered in a connected way. So what does the ketores have to do with the candle? So what is ketores? What does the idea of incense represent? So incense represents the ambiguity of spirituality. Represents the idea of we want to be spiritual, we want to be connected, but everything's a mystery to us. The idea of being connected to God is mysterious. It is a mysterious idea. What is the idea of the menorah? Then the menorah is to clarify that there are certain things that we do understand, that it's not all just ambiguous and we don't have to worry about it. The menorah is a specific mitzvah. Yes, go out there, go and try to figure out these things, but always remember there is a menorah, there is a basis that you are going to be that you're going to remain connected to. So Hashem is telling Aaron, they might bring the ketores, but you're going to bring the light unto people. You're going to be the teacher of Klal Yisrael. You're going to be the ones who are going to continue to make sure it's clear. That are going to clarify things, and as we then connect that back to the menorah, to the idea of Hanukkah candles as well. Right? The idea of Hanukkah is to clarify this idea that even though yes, Hashem is there for everybody, all mankind might have their connection, etc. But remember our singular, unique connection that we have, as the Gemara commented again, as the Gemara said, to remember Eidus Hu L'Bay Olam. It's a reminder to everybody Shashchina Shor B'Yisrael, that the Shechina is residing amongst us. We might not always get it, we might not always see it, we might not always understand it, but there always will be that light to remind us that we have that singular, unique connection to Hashem. On that note, we now head into Hanukkah to attempt to experience
Jews have a lot
Thank you very much for coming.